and you're tuned to Pop Defect Radio, subversive music for dangerous times. I'm your host, Skid Mark Bob, as we trek through some of the most radical, independent, uncensored, conscious music. I get sent, pirate, the bar. Please stand by.
Fellow citizens, events in Iraq have now reached the final days of decision. The danger is clear. Using chemical, biological, or one-day nuclear weapons, obtained with the help of America and our friends. This regime has already used weapons of mass destruction against Iraq's neighbors and against Iraq's people. The United States and other nations did nothing. America and our allies accept that responsibility. In 1 year, 5 years, the power to inflict harm on all free nations would be multiplied many times over, whose threats were allowed to grow into genocide and global war, to kill thousands or hundreds of thousands of innocent people in our country or any other. That duty falls to me as Commander-in-Chief. By the oath I have sworn, by the oath I will keep. Our goal will not be achieved overnight, but it can come over time. There will be more wars of aggression against your neighbors, more poison factories, more executions of dissidents, more torture chambers and rape rooms. Intelligence gathered by this and other governments leaves no doubt the United States continues to possess and conceal some of the most lethal weapons ever devised. Our good faith has not been returned. The cause of peace requires the full force and might of our military, and turn the creative gifts of men and women to the pursuits of hatred and violence. This is not a question of authority. It is suicide. Good night, and may God continue to bless America.
testify!
Forces have begun striking selected targets of military importance to undermine Saddam Hussein's ability to wage war. These are opening stages of what will be a broad and concerted campaign.
Former U.S. Marine officer Scott Ritter.
The Bush administration built a campaign that was more about psychological operations and information warfare.
Draft-dodging Chicken Hawk and Secretary of War Donald Rumsfeld.
Our goal is to defend the American people and to eliminate Iraq's weapons of mass destruction and to liberate the Iraqi people.
Draft-dodging Chicken Hawk George W. Bush.
We have to
keep the peace, to make the world more peaceful, to make our nation and other nations more secure.
Help the Iraqi people to a representative self-government.
If our goal and objective is the liberation of Iraq, the first thing we have to ask ourselves is, do the Iraqi people want to be liberated by us?
We refuse to leave the Iraqi people in slavery.
The Bush administration was blinded by its arrogance, by its ideology, into believing that Iraq would be an easy target, that the entire world bought into the focus of Iraq as the center of all that is evil, and that that evil resides in the person of one man, Saddam Hussein.
And we're going to free the people of Iraq from the clutches of Saddam Hussein and his murderous allies.
One of the preconditions that we've built into how we've assembled force, that the Iraqi people would welcome us and would not resist us.
Fierce fighting currently underway will demand further courage and further sacrifice. In the last week, we have seen the brutal and cruel nature of a dying regime.
So we assumed this and started reducing our forces. Then we have to ask the question, will the Iraqi army fight?
We expect such war crimes, but we will not excuse them. Every Iraqi atrocity has confirmed the justice and the urgency of our cause.
Again, our assumption was that with the exception of a few hardcore units surrounding Saddam Hussein, the majority of the Iraqi army would not fight. So we, again, reduced our military forces.
Officers and soldiers in the field will increasingly see that their interests lie not in dying for a doomed regime, but in helping the forces of Iraq's liberation.
A campaign in which we bought into our own propaganda.
We're out to keep the peace, to make the world more peaceful.
And we assume the Iraqi people and the Iraqi military buy them.
Their ability to control their country is slipping away.
We're now fighting the most desperate units of the dictator's army.
To those in the Iraqi chain of command, some words of advice. Do not obey regime orders to use weapons of mass destruction. Do not follow orders to destroy any more of Iraq's oil wells.
And we said that you are going to lose. Your defeat is inevitable. Saddam Hussein's days are numbered. You must throw down your arms and surrender. And if you don't, we will shock and awe you.
And asking the Iraqi military to lay down their arms.
And as soon as you see the magnificent power of the American military, you will surrender. None of this has happened. And as a result, we have invaded a nation of 23 million with a standing army of over 450,000, an additional 120,000 elite Republican Guard troops, an additional 100,000 elite security forces loyal to Saddam, 80,000 Fedayeen paramilitary forces loyal to Saddam, 900,000 Ba'ath militia and tribal militia, and we've gone in with less than 120,000 boots on the ground. That's 120,000 combat forces in Iraq to take on this military might that, while it is not capable of effective offensive military operation, is capable and is willing to fight and die for Iraq. We've seen impressive military gains in the first couple days. This is part of the shock and awe campaign. You send a massive mechanized force through empty desert, shooting up the western bank of the Euphrates until you get within 50 miles of Baghdad. But then you run into military force. And the problem is now you have a 300-mile line of communication, and this force that's up in Karbala requires a constant supply of fuel, ammunition, and spare parts.
All of you understand the importance of a well-supplied and well-trained fighting force.
And when you don't get that, that force cannot fight. And because the Iraqis didn't surrender, because they didn't cave in, they are threatening this line of communication, choking off the fuel, the ammunition, the spare parts. And now we are incapable of waging effective offensive military action against Baghdad. This was all predictable.
The men and women who've worn the nation's uniform set an example of service and an example of sacrifice.
I predicted this in the fall of last year. I said if we carry out the Rumsfeld plan, we will be defeated because we cannot win militarily, we cannot win diplomatically, we will lose economically.
I've asked Congress for nearly $75 billion wartime supplemental appropriations bill.
We have troops stuck outside of Baghdad, incapable of waging effective offensive military operations. Our combat power is being bled away from the tip of the spear to protect an overextended line of communication. We went to war without reserve. No military commander would ever do that. We committed to a major offensive military operation without reserve.
There have been a variety of views offered on that subject, and a lot of them tend to cluster around the idea that the most serious period would be if the Iraqi regime did not flee and the forces got close to where they likely are in Baghdad or Tikrit. And the closer they got, the greater the danger of that. But we don't. That's been more a theory on the part of outsiders rather than a theory on the part of insiders.
Now we have dissipated our combat strength. We find we need more, and it's not there. The 4th Infantry Division is on its way, but it won't be ready until April. And even that's not enough. That will help stabilize the situation, but to be able to go back onto the offensive, we need at least two more division elements, the 1st Armored Division and the 1st Cavalry Division, which were originally earmarked to go, but Donald Rumsfeld, in his infinite wisdom, shut off that deployment. And now to get them, you're talking May. So we're looking at a two-month stalemate outside of Baghdad in which the Iraqis are going to attrit us militarily and attrit us morally, because in order to sustain this front, we are going to have to shift our tactics to bombing the civilian population center of Baghdad, which will result in not a very significant degradation of the Iraqi command and control, but a significant degradation of the Iraqi civilian population. And we are teaching the world to hate us.
We are sending a clear signal to the world.
God told me to skin you alive.
Terrorists and terror states, do not reveal these threats with fair notice in formal declarations. We are sending a clear signal to the world.
Seventh, to secure Iraq's oil fields.
can start a war. We've got so many bombs. We've got so many bombs. We gotta start a war. We gotta start a war. We got so many bombs. We got so many bombs. We gotta start a war. We gotta start a war. We got so many bombs. We got so many bombs. We gotta start a war. We gotta start a war. We gotta start a war.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
On my orders, coalition forces have begun striking selected targets of military importance.
It is our hope that Iraq will live as a peaceful and cooperative member of the family of nations, thus enhancing the security and stability of the Gulf.
Person who gets to decide, not you.
Just 2 hours ago, Allied Air Forces began an attack on military targets in Iraq and Kuwait. These attacks continue as I speak.
We're working hard.
And so, in my speech to the nation, I asked Americans to give 4,000 hours over the rest of your life of service to America. That's what I asked. I said 4,000 hours. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
The goals for this country are peace. In the world.
As I report to you, air attacks are underway against military targets in Iraq.
Coalition forces have begun striking selected targets of military forces.
These attacks continue as I speak.
We're working hard to bring a diplomatic solution. And we made some progress.
Coalition forces have begun striking selected targets,
thus enhancing the security and stability of the Gulf.
Striking selected targets.
Compassionate American
targets. Targets.
Yet there's more to do. We must strengthen our forces and prepare for new threats. And prepare for new threats. And prepare for new threats.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Peace in the world.
As they come, we felt the vibration of that one almost knocked me off my feet in the hotel room here. That was a major building in the presidential palace. Again, another, just disintegrating, bigger than the Gulf War, Tom, the first Gulf War, much bigger, these explosions.
Bury your tomb. Hi, this is Thomas from Strike Anywhere. You're listening to Pop Defect Radio.
I joined the army. It was kind of like somebody that I had been brought up to respect, wearing a suit and a tie, maybe a little older, in my neighborhood. Think about yourself in your neighborhood and this happening to you. He walked up to me, put his arm around my shoulder and said, "See that fellow on the corner there? He's really evil and has got to be killed. Now, you trust me, you'll go do it for me, won't you? The reasons are a little complicated, but I won't bother to explain, but you go and do it for me, will you?" Well, if somebody did that to you in your neighborhood, you'd think it was foolish. You wouldn't do it. Well, what makes it more reasonable to do it on the other side of the world? That's one question. Well, now hook it into this. If I was to go down into the middle of your town and bomb a house and then shoot the people coming out in flames, the newspapers would say, "Homicidal maniac." The cops would come and they'd drag me away. They'd say, "You're responsible for that." The judge would say, "You're responsible for that." The jury would say, "You're responsible for that." And they would give me the hot squad or they'd put me away for years and years and years, you see? But now exactly the same behavior, sanctioned by the state, could get me a medal and elected to Congress. Exactly the same behavior. I want the people I'm talking to reconcile that contradiction for themselves and for me. The third question, well, I take that one a lot to peace people. There's a lot of moral ambiguity going on around here. Peace people who say, well, we got to support the troops. And they wear the yellow ribbon and wrap themselves in the flag. Say, we don't want what happened to the Vietnam vets to happen to these vets when they come home. People getting spit on. Well, I think it's terrible to spit on anybody. I think that's a consummate act of violence. And it's a terrible mistake, and I'm really sorry that happened. But what did happen? Song Mai happened. My Lai happened. The defoliation of a country happened. Tons of pesticides happened. 30,000 MIAs in Vietnam happened. And it unhinged some people, made them real mad. And what really, really made them mad was the denial of personal responsibility, saying, I was made to do it. I was told to do it. I was doing my duty. I was serving my country. Well, we've already talked about that. Now, it is morally ambiguous to wrap yourself in the flag and wear those ribbons. And it borders on moral cowardice. I don't mean to sound stern. Well, yes, I do. But what does the Nuremberg Declaration say? There's no superior order that can cancel your conscience. Nations will be judged by the standard of the individual. Look, the president makes choices. The Congress makes choices. The Chief of Staff makes choices. The officers make choices. All those choices percolate down to the individual trooper with his finger on the trigger, the individual pilot with his thumb on the button that drops the bomb. If that trigger doesn't get pulled, if that button doesn't get pushed, all those other choices vanish as though they never were. They're meaningless. So what is the critical choice? What is the one that we've got to think about and get to? And friends, if that trigger gets pulled, if that button gets pushed and that bomb falls, and you say, I support the troops, you're an accomplice. I don't want to be accomplice. Do you? And I don't want to dehumanize anyone. I don't want to take away anybody's humanity. Humans are able to make moral decisions, moral ethical decisions. When we tell the trooper who pulls the trigger or the soldier who turns the wheel that releases oil into the Persian Gulf that they're not responsible, just following orders, just doing their duty, have no choice, bypassing them, making them a part of the machine, we deny them their humanity, their responsibility for their actions and the consequences of those actions. Look, I've been a soldier. I don't want any moral loophole. I need to take personal responsibility for my actions. And if we don't learn how to do this, we're going to keep on going to war again and again and again. Well, a final question. When I'm at these war support demonstrations, the question I ask most is, you think that people on the other side of the world need to be killed on the strength of voices coming out of a box? Sounds pretty silly when you put it that way, doesn't it? I want to know from the person standing in front of me, what part of you is responding to those voices? Can you tell me? What makes you feel that way? Who in you are those voices talking to? Who's really answering, and why? I hear those voices. I have those feelings. The violence is in me, too.
Yes. What's love? Not yes. War is life, and war is death. War's a vacuum, but war's a breath. War is a war that could never be won. But war is the way Johnny got his gun. War, it brings students out in a rally. War, something that I see too much in Cali. War with blacks, and war with brown. And war with everyone as the sound resounds in war. More than you bargained for. War is blinding, and war's raw. War's getting picked off, storming the shore. And war is how the rich control the poor. War is the boom of impending doom. War fills history books and fills tombs. War is my lyrics when I duel with drums. War is the shape of things to come. War is suffering, war is bluffing. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. War is one of my favorite groups. And war is why they turn your kids to troops. War between my zodiac twin. One wanna do right, but
one wanna send. War is a loop that does not end, cause war is often between kin and friend. Everywhere is war and rumors of war. I rap battle hymns cause tour is a war. Some war with God and some with the beast. Some war for war, but we war for peace.
Job, so they had to go and get ground up in Bush's war machine. What the fuck do the polls on TV mean we won't give our consent to blow up foreign soil.
No blood for oil. War. What is it good for? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Nothing from nothing leaves nothing. You gotta have something. You gotta have peace. January 15th, 1991. The deadline, curious George gave Saddam Hussein to evacuate troops from Kuwait. Oh yes, curious George Bush, the same curious George that vetoed the Civil Rights Bill. Ironic enough, the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King, the drum major for peace.
War is not the answer.
Understand it, it makes my blood boil. On foreign soil, trading blood for oil. How many heroes will there be from this war? And what the hell are we really fighting for? Why in the hell would I serve my time to Sam? When Sam don't give a damn. Now here's an opportunity for peace and unity. Ceasefire in the Middle East. It's time to increase peace.
Citizens and do what they believe. I think this war is bullshit. I think something needs to happen about it.
That's how the country operates.
Violence is not the answer.
To prevent war with Iraq. They should have been doing this when they were making war on our people and obliterating our people and taking our resources. They based the Constitution on the great law of peace, the Iroquois Confederacy, but they didn't follow the principles that the great law of peace follows. And it says all men are created equal. But according to the United States Constitution, that doesn't mean the red man, the brown man, the black man, or the poor man, or any women. What they're talking about is all rich men are created equal, or all noblemen are created. And I think that's how they interpret it.
Imperialist policies that began when they got here and landed at Plymouth Rock. It's not changed a bit. Expansion all the way across, the earth is round, they ran out of places to go, and now they're looking for places to take more from. It's about money, power, and control. It's about greed, and the corruption of extreme greed. That's what it's really about. That's what they're all about. So all of them have been fights over territory and what's in the land, whether it's minerals or oil, what the land will grow. Bananas in Central America, coffee, can't make any difference. These people just don't have any end to their greed. They will never be satisfied, never. You need to bring them under control. Any control needs to be done. The masses of the people need to control the corporate capitalist class, because they're really out of hand now. We've been like running roughshod over everybody.
The genocidal policies of the United States government is still continuing, and it's going worldwide.
Bush is the new Columbus, and globalization and the whole routine that he has developing for Iraq, the war on terrorism. Indigenous people are accustomed to being labeled as terrorists, whether foreign or domestic. And so we see this as an extension of the plan that Columbus began in 1492. So it's encouraging to see all these people out here saying that we're drawing a line against that kind of policy, globalization and oppression, the hierarchy of rich against poor, and north against south, in terms of northern hemisphere against southern hemisphere, rich countries against poor countries. That's the whole legacy of Columbus. We're hoping that this momentum continues until October the 12th, when in the birthplace of Columbus Day, we're going to come out here again and say, it's time to put an end to this. It's time to put an end to this legacy and envision a new future, not only for Denver, not only for the United States, but for the hemisphere and for the world. Well, this war is about what it's always been about who's in the way. Who's in the way of capitalist expansion? Who's in the way of the New World Order? In 1492, Columbus represented the New World Order. In 2002, Bush represents the New World Order. And anybody who gets in the way gets pushed out of the way, gets destroyed, because you are the enemy. Bush has been very clear about that. You're either with him or you're against him. Columbus said the same thing to those Taino Indians. You're either with us or you're against us. You either get baptized or we'll slaughter you. And that's exactly what they did. So this is definitely the new colonialism, the new imperialism. No question about that. This is a continuation, the newest chapter in that book.
We come to Iraq with respect for its citizens, for their great civilization.
They keep on bombarding this area in front of us. Have they not finished with all these? Look, if they want to bombard the palaces, are they not our heritage? Because it is secret, because it's the birthplace of our president, they went and bombarded one of the best museums in the country. Do you know that? Do you know they have attacked our university, which is called Mustansiriya? Do you know they have attacked one of the oldest schools in the whole world, called Mustansiriya School? Do you know that? Well, please tell your people, let them have a respect for human heritage. This is not Iraq's heritage only. It belongs to the whole world.
To the Iraqi people, let me say that the day of your liberation will soon be at hand.
Do you think we believe that you come to free us? How can't you be either human or logical? You are neither human nor logical in this act. And I was surprised and shocked to hear people applauding your president this evening for the nonsense he was saying. Everybody knows it.
However long it takes to win, however long it takes to achieve our objective, that's important for you to know, the American people to know, our allies to know, and the Iraqi people to know, however long it takes.
You should hear today the people who were bombarded in a very local, modest area where people go and have their fruits, because we eat. Don't think we are hungry people. We have fresh fruit every day. We have fresh vegetables every day. People were going to shop and there were two rockets on that area. Why? Why? What for?
We're working together to make the world more peaceful. We're working together to make our respective nations and all the free nations of the world more secure. And we're working to free the Iraqi people.
And you tell me you are not for oil? What are you for then? Killing people? Just killing people like that?
I often try to put myself in other people's shoes and ask myself, in this case, for example, an Iraqi citizen, what they have to be seeing is a good deal of evidence that the Iraqi people want to be liberated.
Democracy doesn't come by rockets. Democracy comes by dialogue. Why do you want us to listen to your rockets? You talk about peace. You talk about having no interest in Iraq, but to free Iraq. How could you free Iraq with your rockets and your bombardment?